Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is Thursday, July 19th, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Hold that date, September 22nd in Asheville. We're going to be at the Biltmore Lunch with Dr. Mark Skidmore. The lunch is up after you log in at Solari. Just click on Lunch with Catherine, and you can get tickets. It's going to be a remarkable event. If you've never been to the Biltmore, it's just sensational. 2 weeks in Netherlands, in the Friesland. I'm speaking to you from Stavoren, which is one of my absolute favorite places in the world. It's a beautiful area north of Amsterdam in the Netherlands, and it's just great to be here. When I leave, I'll go to Zurich for 5 days and with a short side trip to Basel to see Thomas Meyer again, and then I'll head up to Lake Constance, and then Ulrich Groniger and I will head over to Chartres and Paris. And then I'm going to be up in Brittany for 2 days with Alistair Thompson, the former editor of Scoop Media in New Zealand, and then on to southern France and Toulouse, and then back up to the Netherlands for a week, then over to Scotland. And I'll be back in the United States on September 9th. I have to just say again, it's great to be out of the AT&T service zone. And then I'll be back to Italy in October. I'll be speaking at the Scientists for Peace conference. It's all part of the Future Science series that Ulrich's doing for the Solari Report. So that'll be in Italy in October 19th to 21st, or on October 19th to 21st. Our theme tonight is the big story, is the one you didn't hear a peep about, and that is the Bohemian Grove, which has been going on along the Russian River north of San Francisco. That's somebody called it the Bilderberg West. It's a place where decision makers get together and have the opportunity to meet secretly and really come up with what I would say is very serious strategic planning about where the world's headed and what they're going to do about it. I think that I have never seen whiteout of the kind that's been applied to this year's Grove meeting. Interestingly enough, the Santa Rosa Democratic Press, I think that's its name, the local Santa Rosa paper, put up a quick article that the Grove was meeting in with pictures of old Grove meetings, and it got taken down within 7 hours. It was gone. So I would say the effort to white out and keep the Grove secret tells me that what Joseph and I have been talking about in the last two news trends and stories about the equivalent of the rape of Russia coming to the United States, but in a very different, it's going to come in a very different guise, as we've talked about, really AI invasion and privatization. So I think there's a lot of hard work among the senior part of the establishment, not the folks screaming in Washington, but the investment community and the real behind the scenes, the real deep state, if you will. I think they're at the Grove figuring it out, and they want complete whiteout, which is part of what Trump's job is to head over to Europe and make so much noise that everyone forgets that the Grove is happening. I would note, so far, the only reference I can find to the Grove meeting is in the Solari Report. I can't find one other media outlet covering it. What are they talking about? They're talking about the reengineering of the federal government. They're talking about the global reset. They're probably also talking about what the indictments are all about. Are we going to arrest 40,000 plus people, or are we just going to tell them that either they resign and give their money back, or they're going to be indicted? Either way, we're working up to some very big changes, and I think it's part of why there's so much engineering of civil war behavior with the media effort. One question I have, a very important question, is the missing money flow over. In other words, is $21 trillion gone, but the incremental flows have stopped or trickled down, particularly because there's now so much more attention being paid by the general population to what in the world is going on with the federal budget. When you tell people that there's no money for pensions or no money for Social Security, it's hard to keep flowing trillions out the back door. We'll get to that again. Trump has done an amazing job of whiting out the story. Everybody's sort of facing Europe, looking at what he's been up to with NATO, and then over in England with Prime Minister May and the Queen, and then meeting on Monday with Putin in Helsinki. And then the tremendous backlash that has come from the Washington establishment as a result. It really does look to me like part of the brouhaha is really engineered whiteout. But there are still real issues at work. The trigger, what Trump is doing, and certainly what he did with Putin, threatens the greatest bubble of all, which is the privilege bubble. The U.S. has practiced hard power and combined it with a soft power game. We promote the rule of law, but we don't respect it. However, we require all of our vassals to pretend that we do, and that's in exchange for rich payoffs to and from the establishments. And all the establishments live in a bubble of privilege, which I'm beginning to think more and more is financed by the money going missing from the federal government, or a great deal of it. But the other thing is the military-industrial complex needs war. They need an enemy. It's big money for more nuclear weapons and more bombs, more weaponry, and it makes control easier if you have an enemy. If you've never seen the machinery turned on in support of the military-industrial complex, I would really recommend you watch a documentary called Shut Up and Sing about the reaction to the Dixie Chicks, who supported the anti-war effort before we went into Iraq. Of course, they were right, but if you watch how the machinery can literally turn on the entrainment and the mind control, it's quite unbelievable. Interestingly enough, you have Steve Bannon, former assistant to the president, again reminding everybody that China is a much bigger problem than Russia. And of course, we have economic advisor Larry Kudlow jumping in and underscoring the refusal of China to agree to any kind of terms on technology transfer. Here's the reality. The leadership and the deep state wants China, needs China, and they're importing a huge number of Chinese immigrants. So the last thing they need is to make the war with China open. They need to keep it secret. So if they're moving tons of Chinese engineers in next door or burning down half of Santa Rosa to make room for them, the last thing they can do is make them out to be enemy number one. Richard Haass, the head of the Council on Foreign Relations, tweeted something out that I couldn't let go. He had several tweets today, very anti-Trump. One was, international order for four centuries has been based on non-interference in the internal affairs of others and respect for sovereignty. Russia has violated this norm by seizing Crimea and by interfering in the 2016 U.S. election. We must deal with Putin's Russia as the rogue state it is. Now, if you look, of course, at what led up to the seizing of Crimea, or Crimea voting by referendum to go with Russia, and the extent to which we violated or extended missiles, violated missile treaties and promises and extended missiles closer to Russia, and interfered with a variety of elections, including in Ukraine, it's pretty outrageous. But I tweeted back to Haass, in the interest of showing respect for non-interference in internal affairs of others and respect for sovereignty, perhaps the council could lead the campaign for the return of Libya's gold. And then, not to be daunted, I tweeted, and where is the $21 trillion missing from the U.S. government, and how does that relate to the financing of the Council on Foreign Relations and its wealthy sponsors and members? And then I had a link to missingmoney.salieri.com. I've indicated several times in recent months, but I'll say it again, I believe the money that started to go missing from HUD in 1997, at the end of 1997, was flowing into the Clinton Foundation, the Tony Blair Foundation, and Jeffrey Epstein's operation, and it wouldn't surprise me if it also flowed into some of the early private equity pools that invested in China at the same time. You can learn more about what was going on then by watching the Worker Trilogy. It's a series of three movies from the BBC. I've reviewed it on the website. They talk about a mythic group called the Gladstone Group that was getting padded government contracts, literally stealing money from the government through the contract mechanism, but building the rendition centers. And my guess is that the There's a lot of crossover between the money that was investing in private prisons in the U.S. and the private investment that flowed into financing the rendition centers for the CIA worldwide. I think that there has been a major money laundering operation using the missing money that goes through sovereign governments. So if you look at the money that's flowing into the Clinton Foundation from sovereign governments all over the world, it wouldn't surprise me if that was money being laundered back from the missing money, and we're using sovereign governments around the world simply to launder some of the money that's going missing from the federal government. Now, why are all these people making such a fuss? Clearly, they have significant criminal liability. They have serious liability in terms of brand and legacy, but they also have serious liability in terms of cash flows. If actions are taken with sealed indictments, you could see people being told they either give all the money back. I mean, we could have a shakedown purge of the kind that we've seen in Saudi Arabia. So you either resign and give the money back, or you're going to be indicted. And a lot of people are going to resign and give the money back rather than fight the fight. I mention this because if you one of the interesting time moments at the Putin-Trump press conference was when, in reference to the fact that Mueller has indicted 12 Russian intelligence officers, Vladimir Putin pointed out that there is a treaty between the United States and Russia with a mechanism for criminal cases to be pursued with the help of Russian enforcement and prosecutors, and for these officers to be questioned. And Putin asked for reciprocity, including on the Hermitage Capital case. Let me just read you what he said in response to a question in the press conference. I mean, the high-profile case involving Bill Browder's Hermitage Capital Company, according to our investigative officers, a group of people, Mr. Browder's business partners, who illegally made over $1.5 billion in Russia, did not pay taxes either in Russia or the United States, but transferred this money to the United States. They contributed $400 million to Ms. Clinton's election campaign. This is official information included in their reports, $400 million. Well, it was up to them. They might have done this legally, but the gains were ill-gotten. We have grounds to suspect that U.S. intelligence officers supported these illegal transactions. This is only one step forward. We can talk about expanding our cooperation. You're welcome. There might be options that are provided for in the appropriate intergovernmental treaty. Even though clearly Putin and Trump would like to improve U.S. relations, either one of them don't deny the extent to which the relationships have deteriorated as a result of a lot of the internal domestic problems related to using the Russian card as a Trump card in the last 2 years. Putin is clearly getting ready for an irrational escalation in sanctions or a global reset, either one. Not to mention the fact that Russia is suffering from the economic impact of the existing sanctions. Why do I say this? Russia, before the summit, liquidated more U.S. Treasury holdings and is clearly dumping the dollar. So let me just read the latest from RT. The share of U.S. sovereign debt bonds in Russia's portfolio has been reduced. In recent months, Russia held $96.1 billion in U.S. Treasuries in March before selling half of its holdings in April, dropping to 22nd place among major foreign holders of American treasuries at $48.7 billion. Only 8 years ago in 2010, Russia was one of the top holders of U.S. debt. With its holdings falling to $14.9 billion, the country is now below the $30 billion threshold for inclusion on the Treasury's monthly report of majority holders. In the meantime, Russia's gold holdings continue to increase. Their share of gold has risen to the highest level in nearly two decades. Russia's gold holdings in May grew by 1% to 62 million troy ounces. So what does that mean? It means that Russia is prepared for a day when economic sanctions would include not honoring treasury securities, which is certainly not a good sign. And as I said, they could also be preparing for a global reset. So what happens next? I would be ignoring the swamp drama and looking for signs of what decisions flow out of the grove. I expect significant changes between now and 2022, and yet again in the third quarter when I go over to see Joseph in, at the end of September for the third quarter news trends and stories. We're going to be talking more about sort of radical change in the U.S. and what could happen. Interestingly enough, Gallup did a poll recently to see what Americans are saying the most important problems facing the country. The economy didn't rank very high. Immigration was number one. But the percentage of people saying the situation with Russia is the most important problem is literally too small to represent with a number. Polls of Republicans show that 79% of Republicans voters polled support Trump's handling of Helsinki, and Trump has announced that he's inviting Putin to the U.S. in the fall. So despite all the hysteria in the media and Washington, the governance of the country continues. Money in markets, U.S. dollar even stronger, now up 3.4% for the year, trading almost at 95. If it breaks through 96, it could get really interesting. Fixed income, the long treasury now down 2.58% for the year. The intermediate down 1.99%. The bond aggregate down 1.4%. Junk down 14 basis points. Ugh, I just don't get junk bonds. Equities, the S&P now up 6% for the year. Home builders down 6.65%. The European ETF down 1.14%. Germany down 3.9%. And developed markets minus North America down 1.52%. Large cap China's down 7.46%. Small caps down 3.41%. And emerging markets down 7%. So U.S. still the star. Still the outperformer. Commodities now down 1.43%. Trade war with China is not going to be good for commodities. Gold down 5.96%. Silver down 8.26%. Of course, oil flying up 16%. Finally, having a good year. As I said, Gallup poll says immigration is the top problem. Very few concerned about the economy. The reality is employment and certainly small business outlook and tax reform have all improved business outlook tremendously. And needless to say, the stock market is up dramatically since the Trump election. I think Republicans are going to get credit for that in the midterm elections. There's no doubt that the heartland is much happier with the Republican administration and Trump in the White House than they would have been otherwise. One of the great question marks on the horizon is in the U.S. stock market. It's really what's called a FANG market. FANG stands for Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google. The tech companies are really overweighted on the upside, and tech is basically carrying the market at the same time that the U.S.-China trade war, really at the heart of it, is about technology and who's going to be the technology leader. If you look at the dependence of the U.S. stock market and economy and global power and position that comes from being the leader, that's a mantle that would be very painful to lose, but is very much threatened. And it's something we'll be talking about more next week when we talk about the rise of the Asian middle class. Another thing that threatens the sort of prominence of the tech companies, EU just fined Google $5 billion, and there's going to be more and more opposition as people realize what Google, Facebook, and some of the soft power surveillance techniques, what some of this software really is. It's a weapon. Anyway, so get ready for the tech wars to get even more intense. On a positive note, the world has had a massive dose of sports over the last couple of weeks. The World Cup in Russia was a great success, and I really enjoyed it because I was in Eastern Europe, and Croatia, of course, made it to the finals, and so I got to sit in Bucharest by the pool with Jason Bodensmith and watch on the big digital screen the final game. Of course, everyone in Eastern Europe was rooting for Croatia, who didn't win. So the French won, and it looked like everyone in Paris was having quite the time. Also, at the same time, we were watching Wimbledon the 2 days before. Between Wimbledon and the World Cup, it felt like the athletes were constantly ejecting a positive note, and sports seemed to have a way of gathering us back together. So it was a very positive break from the politics of the day. Our hero this week is Donald Trump for going to Helsinki. He did the right thing in election year. It was very presidential. One of the things he did was he called Putin a competitor. It's true. Putin is a competitor. But competitors can compete in a way that makes the pie bigger for everyone. They can also compete in a way that shrinks the pie. And interestingly enough, I think Trump and Putin are both people who understand this. They got some good backup in the middle of the shriek-o-meter from Senator Rand Paul and Tucker Carlson. And again, as I said, if you look at the polls, the Republicans overwhelmingly approved of Trump's performance in Helsinki. 79% of Republicans say they totally approve. And if you look at the people in America who are consider the Russian issue to be of significance, it's tiny. And you wouldn't know that to listen to the shriek-o-meter. The shriek-o-meter is quite strong, and I think is quite effective because the sort of the entrainment is so heavy. I also want to give a shout out to Robert Kennedy Jr., who's indicated he does not believe the official story of his father's assassination, given his importance and significance within many different networks. It's a very courageous thing to do. What he's done in addition on vaccines is very courageous as well. So extraordinary courage from Robert Kennedy Jr., and we appreciate it. Let's go to the movies. This is really going to be True Stream Media Month. For the Let's Go to the Movies, I put a short documentary in from Aaron and Melissa Dyke of True Stream called The Power of Your Intentions. It's about the very famous rice experiment. If you haven't seen it, you need to know about the rice experiment. You certainly need to know about some of the books behind these kinds of ideas. The Hato Institute and Messages of Water. If you don't know them, I would check them out. But I can't think of a better way to underscore the value and importance of thoughtfulness and good manners. But I just have to mention, I put up a commentary this week. The new documentary from True Stream is out. It's called The Minds of Men. It's about the deep state's experiments with mind control from World War II to approximately the mid-70s. It's absolutely sensational. It's very long, so get out the wine and popcorn because you're going to be – it's a long one, but it's absolutely fantastic, and I can't recommend it to you enough. You can stream it on Vimeo, and I think shortly there'll be DVDs available on Amazon. So anyway, The Minds of Men from True Stream Media. We're going to get Melissa and Aaron back to talk about it on the Slayer Report, and we'll have it. Let's Go to the Movies then. But don't wait. Just go out and get it. It's fabulous. Our interview this evening is with a remarkable young man, Daniel Post-Senning, who is the great-great-grandson of Emily Post, author of one of the most popular reference books ever published in America, Etiquette. I grew up on the third edition. I now also own the 17th and 19th editions. Daniel and his family run the Emily Post Institute in Vermont, and they have kept the tradition alive. They are an incredible resource. It's one of the things I hear from many subscribers is, how do I maintain my mind and my manners, given the extraordinary debasement going on around us? How do I maintain my manners in the face of the shriek-o-meter? How do I teach my kids? How do I teach grandkids about manners, given what's going on? And I think the Emily Post Institute is a real treasure of how-to resources for nurturing a more human civilization. So I was very appreciative of Daniel of Taking Time Out. He is co-author of the 19th edition. They're working, I believe, on a 20th. But he's also a co-author of The Etiquette Advantage in Business and Manners in a Digital World, Living Well Online. And he is co-host with his cousin Lizzie Post of a weekly podcast, Awesome Etiquette. So that is the Institute is a great resource, and so I hope you are inspired. And remember, there are people out there who can help protect us from the debasement that sometimes seems a little bit overwhelming. As Catherine, I wanted to start with a very important warning. I'm going to read you something sent to me by a subscriber. He also sent a form with it, which I will describe. The form is deeply invasive and shocking. So let me just read his note. Attached was one of three forms that a counselor asked my partner and I to fill out when we went in for some relationship counseling. I asked her to go with me with the hope that an outsider would help facilitate a conversation, since my partner is challenged about being expressive or intimate. I know why. It's just a question of getting her to connect with those feelings and express them. In any case, I told the counselor that we were not willing to fill out the attached form and that I did not think it had any relevance for why we had come, and that my opinion, given today's world, no one should fill out such a form. She was taken aback but said, okay, but I may have to ask some of the same questions at some point in the session. I said, okay, we can cross that bridge when we come to it. Today, when I walked in for the individual session that she requested, she said that after further investigation, she discovered that it is a requirement under Ohio law to have such a form filled out. That is astonishing, but it also tells you everything you need to know about where things are headed. Needless to say, I walked out, and my partner and I had a conversation tonight without a mediator, form attached. This subscriber did absolutely the right thing. You do not want to fill out those forms. Those forms can and will be used against you in many other potential contexts. You do not want to fill out those forms. I'm sure you can find a spiritual counselor or someone outside the country if you need counseling, or in a jurisdiction that doesn't do that. You do not want to fill out those forms. I don't care how inconvenient it is. It is dangerous. Please don't do it. Dear Catherine, manners, the perfect topic for this week. I'm really talking about political manners. Where did they go? It's suddenly okay to openly discuss killing a sitting president, vilifying his supporters, ad hominem attacks rather than factual and honest disagreement. I listen to otherwise smart people truly believing he was not fairly elected. Then he's running down America, that he's greedy and violent, on and on. All this for a man they once supported 20 years ago, who is a successful businessman who loves our country and is working without a salary. Phew. 40% of people believe this and are daily being fed by NPR, CNN company. The deep state is running very deep. What are your thoughts so successfully navigating through this unmannerly mess? First of all, turn off all the technology. Try and use technology only when you absolutely have to. Get as much sunlight and as much infusion of nature as you possibly can. Understand that the technology is applied to produce the profits of war. That's why I said watch the Shut Up and Sing documentary about the Dixie Chicks, because you can really see how the entrainment turns on that machinery. And please watch the True Stream New documentary and listen, if you haven't, to the Adam Trombley interview on entrainment technology, because the technology is really bad. You want to remove your energy from it. I find it's much easier for me to do that in Europe because the technology feels and seems much less invasive here. Again, it could just be I'm out of the AT&T service area. If you want to engage with people, keep bringing people back to the facts, ideally with math. If you look at my Twitter feed, you'll see I keep thinking bringing things back to the $21 trillion and missing money. So, and I try to stick with kindness and amusement. It doesn't always work. Someone was being really irrational about a day or two ago. I replied to them, oh, I'd love to see the payroll you're on. Well, of course, they delisted me. Dear Catherine, during the recent podcast, you cast some disparaging remarks about Mr. Armstrong. Very few financial commentators have good things to say about him, yet his forecasting models are impeccable. Do you have any information about him, or can you explain why you have a negative attitude towards him? I don't trust Armstrong's intentions or his integrity. Now, I have some good things to say about them because everybody has positive and negatives, but let me step through this. When he was released from prison, I was concerned because oftentimes, what was done to him was pretty horrible. So I'm not saying that it wasn't, but oftentimes when people are released in the way that he was, they come with a leash or a control file. So he made a deal to get out. I understand why he did, but if that's the case, and I'm just guessing, it gives him a prior commitment other than his subscribers and members. Martin Armstrong is like many very talented financial professionals. They refuse to deal with the reality on the asset side of the balance sheet. So they won't look at mind control. They won't look at an ionized sky. They won't look at global spraying, as well as the covert side on finance. They won't look at the black budget. They won't look at the missing money. It's all designed to be socially acceptable. And that keeping it in that box is one of the most powerful control tactics in the world. And it makes it much more difficult for people who have the courage and the intellectual fearlessness to integrate everything with everything. But I think it really holds the conversation back. And so it's kind of a mind control in itself. So the refusal to deal with hard reality that involves very big numbers, I think, makes me wonder exactly how his black box really does work, which gets me to the third point. I don't believe in black boxes. To the extent that you don't know what's in the black box or how it works, there's no way to know whether it's a true black box or inside information. I do think that Armstrong sincerely has a lot of confidence in his computer models, but again, I don't believe in secret proprietary things that predict the future. I've never known them ultimately to work, and they work until they don't. And I have no way to know whether his predictions are really coming out of the computer or they fit with a managed case, and that's part of the deal he made. He made an attack on Rob Kirby, which was very nasty and very cheap, I thought. It was short and sweet, so I don't want to exaggerate it. But he basically said Kirby was saying what he was saying about the Exchange Stabilization Fund to sell newsletters. Nothing could be further from the truth. I've never met anybody who does less marketing than Rob Kirby. Kirby's a real truth teller and a very sincere guy. And he was going where Armstrong won't go. And rather than Armstrong simply not going there, he tries to cheap shot Kirby, which is what I find people do when they have a leash or control file and are trying to protect their reputation from failing to do the kind of courageous things that Kirby does. So, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he just completely disagrees with Kirby at that. You know, there's a way to say, express a disagreement without a cheap shot. And the cheap shot just gets me back to it's a high probability indication of me of lack of integrity. On the positives, I think that Armstrong's very hardworking. I think he's knowledgeable about the financial markets, and I think he has a lot of interesting insights. If you look at sort of what I've been saying for the last 3 or 4 years, I match up much more closely with Armstrong than almost anybody in the markets. So we tend to agree, but that's because I'm predicting the managed case, not because I have a black box that works. So consequently, occasionally I'll post some of his things so he passes the useful test. But for me, he doesn't pass the integrity test. Could I be wrong? Absolutely. But I think it's dangerous unless you're pretty sophisticated to parse through his work, because if you depend on him and it turns out he does have a leash, you could get yourself in real trouble. But the reason I made the comment I made, and which was disparaging, was he gave an answer on a deep state question that intimated that the deep state was the civil service and they'd started to go wrong in 1999, which is so shockingly ignorant and outside of the truth that you can't believe that someone as intelligent as Armstrong would say. You can't believe he just made that as a mistake. The alternative, he's helping with the pin the tail on the civil service to help tee up prioritization. And that's not a good sign. That really argues that he is on some kind of leash, because that comment is so, you know, to say that the deep state went wrong in 1999 as opposed to 1963 when Kennedy was assassinated, and to imply that it's the civil service and not the Rockefeller Foundation. Read David Talbot's book about who really killed Kennedy. So it's, you know, what he said was so far away from the truth that you couldn't even fathom. He had the nerve to, you know, to say something that was that ignorant. So that was what caused my disparaging comment, because it's arguably the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen him say. Hi, Catherine. This video may have already come to your attention. Then there's a link to a video at Natural News. I'm beginning to wonder if the high degree of uniformity intensity in the condemnations coming from left and right is actually something else than a shared political philosophy. And then the author goes on to imply that there's statements and emotional levels are too identical. I'm sensing that they are actually implanted with receivers. If you take the time to watch the Truth Stream documentary, and there are other documentaries on mind control, and then read Atlanta Freeland's book on the ionized sky, and listen to Clifford Carnicom and Sophia Smallstorm, there are many different arguments to indicate that the nanoparticles in the global spraying basically serve as a kind of implant in our bodies and act as receivers. So, you know, in theory, this is perfectly possible. I do think that the pitch and drama and sort of, you know, faked civil war is designed to give great air cover for radical reengineering that's coming. If you read The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein, or the Ann Williamson's work on the rape of Russia, or my discussions with Farrell about what I think is coming, you know, there's no doubt that the more you can keep people worked up and turned against each other, the easier it's going to make them do whatever they do. And they're going to use that to clean house and re-engineer. So, for example, if they want to privatize, you need to get the civil service out of your way. And, you know, you can use an angry crowd to do that if you get them worked up, and then sick them on the people who are standing in the way of Goldman Sachs having a party. Anyway, more comments from the same commenter. It's in the notes. Then someone sent in a link about Wyoming passing a law that allows, by dropping taxes on gold and silver, you can use it as a currency. I know you're a strong proponent of local banking. What implications could the use of gold and silver as money again have on local banking? Do you think this will catch on in other states? Yes, I do. Now that Wyoming has passed this, I think other states will go on. Of course, I told one subscriber I'm due diligencing the new depository gold silver in Texas. Having depositories, of course, is a very important part of getting that kind of liquidity going. So I think this is absolutely going to spread. Then you say, would it be better to have bank cash denominated in gold, silver, or Fed notes? That's a complex question, depending on your situation. If you haven't seen our wrap-up called Where to Stash Your Cash, I would recommend you do that. It really depends on how much you need. I would note that one subscriber asked me to check out the report she got from Schwab about FDIC, and I spoke with one banker. Here's what they said there. We are getting reports on timing issues on FDIC insurance. I've heard of banks that have failed, and it took a few years for the FDIC to give the depositors their money. That is really disturbing. Can you imagine taking a few years to get your money from FDIC? I would suggest your readers to not rely exclusively on the FDIC insurance. Rather, do some of their own due diligence on their bank. Every bank's quarterly financials are publicly available. And then they have the link, which will be in the notes, to the ffiec.gov website. Additionally, if a bank is having problems, they will typically be under enforcement action by their regulator. Enforcement actions are also publicly available. You can read the details of what problems the bank is having in these enforcement actions. I would particularly be looking for capital deficiencies, as capital shortages are what can cause a bank to fail. I couldn't agree more. It's extremely important that you underwrite whether it's a precious metals depository or a bank, you underwrite it on its own merits and just don't depend on the FDIC. This is all part of sort of the deterioration of the federal credit, but that's an interesting warning. So I appreciate the subscriber who brought the notice from their Schwab account to our attention, and you want to be thinking about that. So again, your individual situation is different, but this is between having local depositories that you can trust or being able to circulate gold and silver and use them as a currency without tax makes it much more attractive to hold gold and silver. And of course, you know, the price is down, so it's never too late to get your core position. I have an article that you might want to read. It's called What Percentage of My Assets Should I Hold in Gold and Silver? Or Should I Hold in Precious Metals? It's linked in the core concepts section. So just go onto the website in the second column. You can, or the middle column, you can link on core concepts and you'll find it under precious metals. Okay, that's it for tonight. Coming up, July 26th, the second quarter wrap-up, the rise of the Asian consumer, unbelievably important topic. I am really looking forward to talking with you about this next week. The following week, SACR, the Emerging Multipolar World U.S. Russia Relations. Obviously, we have a lot to talk about. Then the following week, Ulrich Groniger is publishing her next Future Science, The Wave Genome. I'm very much looking forward to that. The following week, an amazing conversation between Harry Blaser and Hugo de Garis, builder of computer brains, AI and the Artelect Wars. Hugo's book, The Artelect Wars, warns about the dangers of AI. So deep dive on the dangers of AI. And then August 23rd, Melissa and Aaron Dykes of TrueStream Media are going to join us to talk about their new documentary, The Minds of Men. Don't wait for the interview. You want to watch that as soon as possible. You can read my commentary up at Soleri.com. And then as soon as we have the audio ready, we're going to put up a special Soleri report, a conversation in Sofia with the marvelous Thomas Meyer. So until next week, when I will come to you again from Friesland in the Netherlands to talk about the rise of the Asian consumer, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.